This is episode number 107 with Ryan Blair. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. What's up, everyone? Thank you so much for joining me today on the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited about our guest today. His name is Mr. Ryan Blair. We just had an awesome time going for a little hike here in the Hollywood Hills on Runyon Canyon, and had a great time to be able to connect with Ryan and kind of tap into his brain about how he's built such a massive company in a short amount of time. Now, for those that don't know who Ryan is, he is the CEO of Visalus, a number one New York Times bestselling author and serial entrepreneur who came from nothing to lose and had everything to gain. And when he was 21 years old, Blair had already founded his first business, 24/7 Tech, and has since created and sold numerous other companies for hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of his career. And he was named 2012 Entrepreneur of the Year by Ernst & Young. Now, Ryan is an awesome guy. We had a great time today going over this interview. We really dive into about how he got to where he is, the importance of mentors, how to scale a business. Once you start making so much money, you know, you go from the million to $10 million range, and then you go up to $100 million. How do you scale a business that big? And how do you think big enough so that you can not get overwhelmed? And all the other obstacles along the way. So I think you guys are really going to love this episode. So make sure to stick around and listen to the entire thing. Now, without further ado, guys, let's go ahead and dive in. Make sure to circle back, go to the show notes at the very end of this episode, check out all the links about Ryan at the end. There's going to be some great content all the way to the very end. So stick around to the end, share it with your friends, and let's go ahead and dive into this week's lesson with the one and only Ryan Blair. I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent, all in the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. They know how to help you win the right home at the right price. So download the Redfin app to get started today. Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. I'm here with Ryan Blair. What's up, my man?
Good to see you.
I'm still like sniffling and like trying to catch my breath because we are at the top of Runyon Canyon,
yeah,
where you live up in the Hollywood Hills. We're looking out at one of the most beautiful views in the country, probably over all of LA in the hills. And Ryan just took me on this crazy trek straight down and then straight back up Runyon Canyon on a path that I'd never been on. So catching my breath, very excited to connect, and thanks for sharing stories so far with me.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's good to get to know you. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I appreciate all your listeners.
Yeah, appreciate it. So, you know, I found out about you a few years ago because every time I would go on a plane, I'd see your book.
Yeah.
bright orange in the front of every bookstore in airports.
Yeah, the book's called Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain.
Yes.
You can buy it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
But it's everywhere you go at every bookstore in airports. And I remember seeing Don Yeager, who helped you writing it as well, or wrote it with you. And I was like, man, this guy must be awesome, because Don Yeager was a friend of mine. And I was like,
he's an seven times. I was his number 8th New York Times bestselling book. He's written mostly books for professional athletes. And I met him through Coach John Wooden. So, you know, I believe everything happens for a reason. Meeting you, meeting Don, being on this podcast, you know, is all connected.
Yeah. He was on the podcast about a year ago as well. And we had a great conversation. Yeah. So
Don's awesome. Good friend.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited. And I'm even more excited. I want to talk about your book, but I want to talk about you.
I'm a little worried, though, because you asked me earlier before the interview if anything was off limits. So I'm curious about what...
got a few questions on my sleeve.
Where's my publicity people? Go ahead. Go share it.
Yeah. I mean, you have a fascinating book. It's a great read. I actually told you before that I don't read much, and I skimmed it and read some chapters. My assistant, Sarah, actually reads them all. She was like, this is a great read.
Yeah. I rewrote the book. So Don taught me about the structure of writing a book. He taught me about how to, you know, how many words per chapter. But a lot of the art of the actual writing process was done by myself. And it was because I lost my stepdad, who was my original mentor, and my mother all about the same time. And so I was going through a bit of an emotional period of time as my company was growing. And I decided I'd write it, you know, from a very, you know, heart on my sleeve kind of approach. So that's what you got there.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really inspiring. My assistant, Sarah, actually said that she cried a couple of times. Yeah. And she really was really emotional for her.
Yeah. Well, you know, when as an artist, and, you know, Don taught me how to be a writer, and I'm working on my next book right now, and writing is one of my, you know, passions. It always has been. The best you can ever hope is to invoke emotion in people: anger, hatred, ambition, rage, whatever it is. So if you can do that through written form, it's the hardest. So, you know, it's because something I've learned.
Because people may not remember the specific things you say, but they remember the feelings that you created for them, right?
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of studies on, in fact, one of which is you can be listening to a great piece of music, but if it ends abruptly, you'll hate the music. Even though the music that you're listening to is wonderful, the ending is what you hated. You only remember the your final experience with it. The last chapter of the book, of the epilogue, is a lot about my mother and my relationship with my father, who disappeared when I was 13. And so it was a bit of a, you know, an emotional leave off, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of great feedback from it. It's been published. I think we're on 12 different countries, launches a new country every month: Bulgaria, Turkey, China, Russia, Germany.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's an awesome book. So I definitely recommend checking it out. And it talks about how you went from prison gang member to
I was in prison. I was in juvenile hall. But I was juvenile hall. Yeah, I was a gang member.
For some reason, I thought prison. But
You know, the translation in Korea, it says what I learned in prison.
And, wow.
And a couple times when I went there, people looked at me very odd. And, you know, because, you know, prison is taboo there. Where in the States, you know, a lot of our population is actually in prison right now. Yeah. So it's not as taboo.
My brother actually went to prison for 4.5 years when he was 19, selling drugs to an undercover cop.
My brother did 8. My sister did 6. My other brother did about 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the only one that actually didn't go to prison.
I didn't go to prison. I went to juvenile hall and I was facing prison. And that's when I learned I'd be a writer. I wrote a letter to the judge, which I actually published a copy of it in my book, begging for leniency. And the judge said that I should be writing in college, not in prison. I was facing 4 years for 211, which is strong-armed robbery. At least that's what I was getting, which, you know, I used to steal a lot of stuff and get in fights and get in trouble. And, you know, that was it. And that's when I got the first male that ever believed in me, that wasn't, you know, one of our fellow gang members or an OG or one of these guys that, you know, takes young people under their wing and has them do their dirt, so to speak. So that was the first time I ever had, you know, an authority figure who was respected publicly, a judge, believe in me. And that's what started the process of me believing in myself.
And how old were you then?
I was 14. No, I was 16. 16. I was 16 years old. It was actually, it's amazing. A lot can happen in, you know, in a short period of time. When I was 16 years old, I was facing 4 years in prison. By the time I was 19 years old, I was starting my first company. So just 3 years later,
So much shifted.
Yeah. You know, I learned entrepreneurship on the streets. In fact, I wrote an article for the Financial Times of London, and I talked about, you know, gangs and gang culture, and gang culture has permeated even into the suburbs, which, you know, I wasn't from Compton. I wasn't from, you know, I wasn't in a Compton gang or one of these gangs, but I was in a gang that was involved in murder, robbery, you know, all kinds of stuff, drug dealing. And it's in culture, the gang culture is permeated through suburbia. And so as a result of that, I got trapped up in it. And you know, and when you don't have male role models in your life, you find them. Yeah. Unfortunately, the ones that you find aren't going to be good ones.
And the people that give you attention or that give you some education or training or just inspiration, just belong in community,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And generally what, you know, our academic society is largely for people that are athletes like yourself or academics. And if you're in between there,
you're screwed,
you know, and you're ambitious or, you know, you're not going to score A's in tests and you're not going to, you know, run a 4.440. So where do you fall in the mix of there? How do you find yourself as a man? And that, you know, as a young man anyways, and that was, you know, that was my struggle early on. I did a lot of things seeking attention or seeking to belong. But I look at it, it's funny. Some, you know, people hear that I lost my father when I was 13. He just upped and disappeared. He's still alive. He's written in recently. And people say, oh, that's a tragedy. And I go, no, it's actually great. Because if that man had stuck around in my life, I probably wouldn't be the man I am today.
Right.
I'm actually fortunate he disappeared at 13. I found my way by the time I was 19. If he'd have stuck with me, I might be, you know, in prison or a terrible person or a terrible father. I have a son that I'm, you know, very passionate about being a great father to him, unlike the one that I had. So I look at everything as a blessing, not as a curse.
Interesting. Yeah. So have you spoken with your father or seen him?
I haven't. You know, it's an interesting question. I've forgiven him. I get a lot of people asking me, you know, what I want a relationship with him. And my answer is pretty simple. I don't want a relationship with anybody that I deem to be unintelligent. And the decisions that he made were not intelligent, emotionally and intellectually. And so why would I want to spend time with person, family or not? Or, it's like, I don't suffer fools lightly. So if this person's a fool to me now, if he had come to me and said, look, what I did was incorrect. What I did was unintelligent. I've since learned, you know, I have a perspective. I'd like to talk to you about it. I'd be all open to it, but
he hasn't done that.
No, he wrote in and said he did all, he abandoned my family so that I could be the man that I am today is basically he took credit for it. And you know, it's a lot of people take credit for your success when you're successful. That's fine. I let him have it. I said, you know what? There are some traits that you gave me. And, you know, but I'm sure this wasn't by your design here. You know, I came here.
Right. You were like, I'm going to abandon him and be an asshole so that my son can grow up and be,
be a success. That's not the best approach. And, you know, but
he should like send you off to like boarding school or something,
exactly,
right?
Or whatever. Yeah. He took credit for it. In fact, the email said, I told you so.
No way.
He said, I told you you'd be a success. And he did. And I said, you know what? If you die tomorrow, I want you taking credit for this. I'd rather have him die knowing that he has a successful son and give him that rather than me try to take that away from him.
Right.
You know, like, but so he did give me some.
I mean, he laid a foundation in some way for you to be driven
genetically and otherwise. And you know what he did is he taught me what not to do. And as an entrepreneur, I know this audience, a lot of entrepreneurs, it is more important for you to learn what not to do than what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody knows what to do. It's what not to do they don't know. So if you really focus on that as an entrepreneur, you'll be a lot more successful. And he taught me what not to do as a father, as a man, as a, you know, as
just through osmosis by being around it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, he was violently abusive. He was a terrible man to my mom. He was, but he was a brilliant engineer. So I picked up a lot of that, a lot of my analytical ability and some of the engineering things that I've done and projects I've done. I've got 5 patents on various software that I've written and a number of different things that I've created, both InVisalis, the company I own, and some of my other venture investments I've done. So that said, you know, some things he gave me that are good.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And hopefully I passed down the positive traits to my son and he adopts none of my negative ones.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Now, what had happened is your dad left you and your mom, right? And your family. And then and then your mom got in a new relationship who became a mentor to you in real estate, right?
Yeah. So my mother worked at a deli and she started dating a rich man. And a lot of times I'll tell people I did get blessed. You know, I basically had an opportunity present itself to me. And I would argue most Americans every day have an opportunity to present themselves. They just don't
see action, right?
Yeah. They just don't see it. It's the Acres of Diamonds analogy, you know, where the old parable where the farmer, you know, sold his farm to go pursue diamonds. And the farm he sold had acres of diamonds in his own backyard. He just didn't have the ability to spot diamonds in the rough. So I look around me every day and I see opportunity and I'm in real estate now. In fact, the view that you're looking at, you can see one of my houses directly across the mountaintop there.
Wow.
You know, I own a number of homes up in these hills.
So you can see what's available. You can be like, oh, that's available. I can buy that. I can renovate it. I can.
Yeah. I'd rather look at my money on, you know, in the form of real estate than in the bank.
Yeah.
Money is not pretty in a bank account. It's pretty in real estate.
Right.
So, or art. I have a lot of art, a lot of different toys.
It's very nice art here.
Yeah. Thank you.
I really like this place.
Yeah.
So she started dating.
His name is Robert Hunt. He was a notch above slumlord. So he had about 100 homes. He would buy them, leverage them. He's a self-made real estate guy. I watched the guy hustle to make his money. And as a result of that, I saw that he applied the exact same things that we did in the streets, except for he didn't have to worry about getting shot. getting arrested. Mm-hmm. He did it legally.
He did it legally.
And ethically, and he made, morally. You know, ethically and morally is interesting because I used to have to evict people. And according to the law, you know, you're supposed to wait 90 days. And he would say, Ryan, go get those people out. And I didn't know any better. So I would get them out, you know, within a week. Right. And the way I would do that is I'd tell them, if you don't get the hell out of here, I'm moving in with you and you don't want me living here. Right. And, and, you know, and so, but you know, I guess I don't have, I didn't have an issue with it at the time.
And how old 18. Were you when you were doing that?
But yeah, but I was, you know, I've got, I broke my hand 5 times. I was a fighter. I was an enforcer. I still fight. I do Muay Thai.
So you had this ego, like,
yeah,
this,
you know, you're stealing from my family. You're stealing from my mentor.
Right. You're going to intimidate.
Yeah, I want you out. Yeah. I'm not going to let you, you know, run the course of the law here in the letter of the law. If you know, if you'll leave voluntarily, you know, I'm not going to go to jail for it, but if you'll leave voluntarily, I want you out tomorrow. Right. I don't want you, you know, squatting in this house, taking the plumbing with you, the sinks with you. These people would do that stuff. Yeah. And they have no regard. And, you know, so, you know, one of the value systems my stepfather gave me and that I've adopted, and I'm a very spiritual person. So in my mindset, I don't like to, you know, I make deals with God all the time and I pray every day and, you know, and I'm always basically saying, you know, my value system, may I honor it? May I, you know, do everything I possibly can to, you know, to operate ethically and honestly within my value system that I have. And, you know, and when people don't operate ethically and honestly, you know, I'll sue them. I'll throw them to the trash. Like I have no time for that type of stuff. There's a lot of bad people out there. Yeah, there really is. Yeah. You got to be careful as entrepreneurs. People are always trying to steal your milk. And that's an analogy I use in my book about, you know, when I was, a kid in juvenile hall, they'd come over and they'd steal your milk from you. And, you know, as a grown kid, that milk's important. And then next thing you know, you learn to stand up for yourself and you don't let people steal your milk anymore. And then, you know, you grow up. And that's the analogy I use in my book.
Wow. Now, so you started your first company when you were 19?
Yeah. I started a company called 24/7 Tech. I was just about to turn 20. I think I may have been, I may have started it at 19 and incorporated when I was 20 years old.
And you weren't in college?
I did go to college. I went to Moorpark Community College and I transferred to Cal Lutheran University. And this is another interesting story that doesn't get told often is I got to use, you know, one of my thesis or my theories on life or philosophies is that, you know, you take your disadvantages and you turn them into advantages. Because I was a ward of the court, I was deemed, you know, it's like being a foster kid, meaning that my custodial parents were not my parents. They were the government, you know, the state of California. Because of that, I was able to use affirmative action to get special financing and special access to schools. Because of that, I was able to go to a prestigious 4-year university without great grades. But because I was, you know, I was able to apply through affirmative action, and I took the money that I got through the federal grants that I was able to receive, and I basically bet it on the stock market and started my company with it. And by the time I was a senior in college at Cal Lutheran, my company was successful. I was making a, you know, fair amount of money. I was, you know, I had a company soon to be worth or be doing $1 million a year in business. So I left school my senior year and pursued my entrepreneurial dream.
That's cool. And that's another example of what you said about like finding the diamonds in your own backyard is like you found the resources to find this school grants or whatever they were, where other people may have not looked for it, but it was available to you.
Yeah. You know, because you take advantage of everything you possibly can and you leverage everything you possibly can. I bought my first house when I was about 21. And the way I did that was, you know, my stepfather, who was a successful real estate agent, I contacted his mortgage brokers and I said, hey, at the time it was my mom's boyfriend, not even my stepfather. I said, my mother's boyfriend would like you to meet with me. And so they gave me a mortgage. I got a real estate agent to help me get it. I wheeled and dealed with a no money down type thing. I actually got money back on the transaction so I could invest in it. Wow. And I'm 21 years old, owning my own house, have not graduated from college, and I've started my own business. And I'm like, you know, the fraud of our education system. These teachers said, I got to go to school and I got to go to college so one day I can own a home. Right. And some of the teachers that were prescribing this method didn't own their own homes. And I'm like, I own my own home. I'm making more money than my teachers ever did. Yeah. I have my own business. You know, all the rules around you are made up by somebody generally no smarter than you or even less smarter than you are. And so once you start observing these rules, you can change.
Interesting.
Them.
What do you think our education system should be teaching? What are the things that they're not teaching that's actually the keys to us being financially secure, having the emotional stability we want, you know, feeling like we have freedom, relationship? What are the things that we should be teaching or learning?
Well, you know, in college, they don't teach about love and about money and, you know, and happiness. I'm not going to teach anybody about love, although I have a genuine love for my son. I'm a single guy. But that said, I could teach you a lot about money, and I'm pretty damn happy. You know, like obviously we all have our days, but you know, I'm fulfilled in the work that I do. I get the pleasure of seeing the stuff that I create turn into successes. I've had a few blockbuster successes. You know, my book was a number one bestseller, New York Times, blah, blah, blah. I've had, you know, some products. I've done $1 billion and over $1 billion, probably close to $2 billion now in the product sales for Visalus, products that I've created, one of which my shake product is, you know, had number one market share in all of the United States. I'm now expanding it across the world. I'm opening up multiple countries, 6 new countries this year, 6 a year right now. I'll do 6 a year every year for probably the next 10 years or so until I'm covering the globe with my company. So I, you know, I get the fulfillment that I dream of as an entrepreneur. I get to have fun with my son. I took him to Universal Studios the other day, just me and him. We went on the rides, you know, we had the time of our lives. This weekend, I'm taking him to the aquarium. You know, it's, you know, I'm happy. I would like to find love, but you know, until then, maybe there's some audience members out there that can contact me on Facebook.
Why do you think? Yeah. Ryan Blair on Facebook.
Yeah. Right. Ryan Blair.
Now, what is it? Why do you want love?
Why not?
Haven't you found it yet? What's held you back?
It's one of those questions. It's no off limit, not off limit. There he goes. You know, I guess what's held me back, I did have love, but you know, I have a son with autism, which makes it very complicated. My priority first and foremost in my life is my business, because then that fuels my family. So my son is able to have the right education that he needs. He's able to get the right therapy, the right help as a result of me being entrepreneurial successful. I also have a handicapped mother who was in a coma for a year that I supported her to the tune of $1,300 a day for 727 days in the hospital.
Wow.
And now, you know, she has to have a full-time live-in nurse, full-time cook. And, you know, so I have some pretty big responsibilities that most people my age do not. I have thousands of people that work for me. So my first priority in life is my business, because that then is able to help me take care of my family. My second priority in my life is my son and my family. And so a woman comes in third the day she shows up, and most women aren't
they want to be first.
They want to be first.
They want the attention.
Yeah. You know, they either want attention, and a woman has a right to be first. Unfortunately, sure. I'm just a person that, you know, that, you know, has, has a long past prior to me of, and, you know, a lot of responsibility. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 19, so that's 18 years of building a business. And so I have a lot of responsibility that comes before everything else, even before my own personal happiness. You know, if there's something going on at work, I got to be there, even if I don't want to be there.
Being the
CEO,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share, because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app, State Farm, lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Is there a way to set yourself to win, to create a win-win so that you're making enough passive income?
Yeah.
Your business is running itself more efficiently without you needing to be there.
Yeah, there is. I see people do
having,
it all the time.
And having the relationship. And do you think you can run a multi-hundred-million-dollar company, almost billion-dollar company, and have love and a marriage
at
the same time?
Maybe one day I'll grow to a place where I'm able to manage that or create that, or I'll want to create that. I'm a little bit fashioned differently though. So I don't have passive income. You know, I was one of the highest paid people in last year. I was the fifth highest paid corporate executive in a publicly traded company under 40 years old.
Wow.
And that's just, the salary that I made, being a part of a public company,
not the bonuses deals
and all the other stuff. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I've never found an amount of money that's enough. I haven't.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't. I've made hundreds of millions of dollars, and I've never actually found an amount of money that's enough.
Why isn't it enough?
Because it's so much fun doing it. Right? Why not make more? It's like if you're playing basketball right now, and you could score another 100 points in a game, would you keep playing, or would you say, no, I'm happy not being the all-time
leading
scorer?
But if it was at the expense of not having love, couldn't you have 100 points and have love at the same time?
Don't you love the game?
But couldn't you also have a win-win?
I don't know. I'm not mastered that game yet. If there's any gurus out there in your podcast, I'll buy your product.
Well, I think it's a lot of probably like desire that you want it as well. It sounds like you want it, but maybe if you wanted it bad enough, you would go and create it probably, right?
Yeah. Or,
maybe you haven't found the one who's like inspired you enough.
It could be that. It could be a lot of things. I believe I've probably found. I've met a lot of girls. I've done a lot of dating. That's definitely the issue isn't the quality or the amount of people that I've been exposed to.
Right.
The issue is me.
Right.
Yeah.
And wanting it bad enough.
Yeah.
And the sacrifice to give up the time or whatever.
Or just not being cooperative or what's it? I'm uncompromising, and
right.
I think that relationships have to have
a little
some
bit
compromising
of
in them.
A little, right? And you don't want to.
No.
You've got the company.
I don't know. Let's next topic.
Cool. Well, let's talk about this business that you sold.
Yeah,
you sold it for. You were going to take it public.
Yeah. So in 2012, so I'd sold the company in 2008 to a group called Blythe, which is an NYC publicly traded company, about $150 million market cap company ran by Bob Gergen, or was ran by Bob Gergen. He recently retired. Bob is one of the best entrepreneurs in the world. He endowed the School of Wharton, the School of Entrepreneurship there. It's called the Gergen School. Bob's given away hundreds of millions of dollars to charity. He's a great mentor of mine, great human being. He bought my company in 2008. It was about to go bankrupt as a result of the recession. We were down to 600,000 in sales, 600,000 in the bank, and 7 million in debt. So it was almost to the point, shut it down. We then launched the Body by Vi 90-day challenge, saw some traction there, and the company blew up. And it went from 2009, we did 9 million in sales in 2009, something like that, if I recall. 2010, we did, I think it was 36 million, 2011, 231 million, 2012, 24 million, and then we sold it for $792.4 million in 2012. So how do you like them apples?
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Like 4 years, went from nine to
600. Oh, no. Well, the beginning of 2010 in January, my prior year sales were $9 million. At the beginning of 2013, my prior year sales were $624 million. So, you're going from 9 million to 624 million, about 36
million. Now, I mean, for an entrepreneur to think about that, the growth is so big over a few years.
Yeah.
And most of the people listening are making around 6 and 7 figures in their business.
Yeah.
Kind of like the solo entrepreneurs. They've got a small team.
Yeah.
Some of them have bigger, but most of them are kind of in that space.
Yeah.
What is that you did to grow it so quickly? And what is like the key to building it from a few million to 50 million over a couple of years? Like how do you even do that? How do you even think about that and scale that?
Yeah, it's not easy. One of my friends that founder of Zappos, Tony Hsieh, he said, growth covers a lot of mud. And you know, as an entrepreneur, your dream is to hit a tipping point, to have something go viral, to make $1 billion, right? You know, I opened up a bank account the other day. I was reflecting at Wells Fargo. And I remember when I couldn't even, you know, I had less than $1,000 in the bank account. And since then, you know, $2 billion has traveled through that bank account.
Wow.
I haven't been able to keep it all. I paid a lot of people. Right. I bought a lot of shit, you know, all that stuff. But $2 billion has traveled through that bank account. And, you know, and the balances have been to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Amazing.
And so that's a neat thing, but it's not easy.
How do you get there?
Yeah.
From 1,000 to...
Yeah, so I'll give you some.
Like, what are the components at least?
Yeah, I'll break it down. One, we basically retrofitted during the recession to a new consumer. So Visalis shifted to meal replacements. So we're basically teaching people and selling people to, as opposed to pay $5 for a meal, buy a Visalis meal replacement, a shake for $1.50, and the consumer was very much open to saving money at the time. Then secondly, we had an opportunity connected to our business. We still do, to promote the challenge. And so you could make anywhere from a couple $100 a month to a couple thousand. And then there were some people that learned how to make hundreds of thousands a month. So at the very promoting the challenge. And there's still people making hundreds of thousands a month promoting it all around the world. But the consuming public, and you know, with job instability, with the recession, with people seeking additional income. So I hit a couple veins at once. And lightning struck and the stars aligned and I got a lot of success from that.
Crazy. Yeah. How did you handle it emotionally as it's growing so quickly when, you know, not ever having that type of growth or that much money come through? How did you?
Yeah. I'm a consummate student. I read all the time. I'm an Audible freak. So I'm on Audible day in, day out. I listen to podcasts like yours, surrounding myself with great people, you know, Tony Hsieh, John Maxwell's a personal mentor of mine. Mm. You know, I'm constantly interviewing other CEOs. I'm trying to learn, you know, I'm still trying to learn how to become more successful or to understand how to build a great company. And I guess the thing that keeps me humble is, you know, you look at a guy like Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah,
he's done something. I ain't done shit compared to Mark Zuckerberg.
He's
right?
Next level,
right? You know, like, you know, I've generated $2 billion in sales. He does that a month, right? Yeah. So, you know, or the Google founders, or you know, Bill Gates. And when I've got to meet a few of these guys, and when you're in their presence, you realize, you know, you have a lot to accomplish still. And so I think you got to keep yourself humble, and you got to look at other external standards, and then, you know, say to yourself, you ain't shit. You haven't done anything yet, right? You might be all proud of yourself because you made $1 million. Big deal. I could find 20 guys that made $1 million that are half as smart as you are. And they're probably happier in some cases. So, so I think you just got to constantly look yourself in the mirror, be self-aware, and keep yourself humble to the fact that you haven't done anything. Although you might be proud of what you've done, you know, you've only reached 5% of your capacity at best.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Have you seen the movie Lucy yet?
I have.
It's an amazing
movie, man.
Right. So like,
so
that,
interesting.
Yeah. You know, I want to get to like 90% capacity.
Yeah. Right.
Not of my brain capacity, cause that's probably physically impossible, but I'm not at 90% capacity of my entrepreneurial capacity, of my writing capacity. So knowing that, you know, you're constantly seeking to sharpen your skills and add to your capacity.
Wow, interesting. Now, a couple things I want to talk about. Yeah. One is mentors, but before we get into that, I want to know, what is your, do you have daily rituals, or do you have any things that you do at least every day, or do you meditate?
Yeah. 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 So I'll tell you what I did before I had a ton of money, because like, if I tell you what my rituals are now, you're going to go,
different.
Oh, so I wake up every day to a chef and
steam room.
Yeah. I
have hot tub,
steam room,
sandy beach on your back
door. Sandy beach in my backyard, inspirational views. I live next to Runyon. You know, when I'm feeling bad, I jump in the Ferrari. When I'm feeling good, I jump in the 64 Lincoln. You know, if I'm really bad, I'll go shop. No, I'm kidding. That is the life I live. But what I did to obtain all that stuff, and I'm not as materialistic as I just came off on the podcast here, but what I did to obtain all that stuff is real simple. I wake up really early, right? So I'm always up early, because I feel like if I can get 2-3 hours of me time in, reading, working out, no one else, I'm not allowing the world to interrupt me, then I will I'll come into the world when everyone else is waking up at 8 a.m.
ready
or 9.
To go.
I'm 5 steps ahead of everybody.
On fire.
Like, I've already thought of everything. Like, while you are, you know, complaining about your coffee, or you're in line for your coffee, or you're posting something silly on Instagram about how much you need coffee to be a nice person, I've already done that. Like, I'm way ahead of
2 hours ago, you did that.
4 hours
and
ago.
You're in the zone.
Time. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it takes me, my ritual is I have to be up 3 hours before my first appointment, meaning And if I'm giving a speech, no matter what, even if I went out till 6 a.m. the night before and I got a speech at 12, I have to be up 2 hours before, even if I have 1 hour of sleep, before I do anything, because it just takes me personally, there's a certain amount of time that I have to get
to prepare.
Yeah, to get prepared mentally, regardless of my sleep deprivation, which, you know, happens often, especially internationally speaking and traveling. So 3 hours ahead of time, no matter what, is, you know, my sweet spot is 4. But no matter what, I'm 3, and then, you know, 2 hours. During that 2 hour period of time, I'm reading, I'm catching up on you know, current events. I'm diving into a book that I've been, you know, I've been studying, or I ever want to finish, you know, that feeling of accomplishment when you finish a book. And then I'm getting a workout in. From there, I'll start talking to my East Coast offices or my European offices. And then from there, I'll start talking to my Los Angeles office. And then I'll move into my Los Angeles office. And I move, we call them moves, right? Which is, you know, point A to point B. So I'll make my move into my LA office at about 10 a.m. in the morning. And then, I'm there till, you know, somewhere 5 or 6, and then I come back home, you know, have dinner with my son, spend time with him. And then I'm back at it, you know, talking to Asia in the evening.
And you do a meditative practice too?
Yeah. You know, I pray, which is a form of meditation for me. Sure. So it's the exact same thing. But I pray every single day, a number of times a day. And what I like to do is, for me, I'm able to shut down all the external noise in an environment where I'm generally sweating. So it's either swimming in my sauna, in my steam room, or in an exhilarating kind of run hike type thing where, you know, where all I can do is have my earphones in. I pick my playlist or my audiobook or whatever it is, and I zone out for a couple hours, and that helps. It's a healing thing.
Wow, that's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah, those are the most important rituals for me. And then, you know, a lot of people don't make time for health. And to me, you know, that's the foundation of who you are. You know, all of your vitality and energy comes from your source of, you know, your health. Yeah. So I'm always trying to focus on that. Although, you know, I like to have fun. I beat myself up a fair amount. You know, I go out and have fun. I live life to its fullest. But I'll get on like my exercise bike. If I can't go to, say, running or something, I'll throw on Bloomberg and I'll catch up. Or I'll be reading a book on the exercise bike, or I'll be emailing people. So, you know, I'm working while I'm working out. So a lot of times people don't make time to work out, but they don't realize you can do both work and work out at the same time.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, you said prayer is a healing process for you.
Yeah.
What are the things you're still working on healing on a daily basis?
That's a great question. My prayer is, you know, I've been blessed to have a lot of responsibility in my life. And I just pray that I'm able to get better, get stronger, make the right decisions, make them for the right reasons, and not do it for my own ego and my own glory, but, you know, rather to give back and to add value to people and not just to simply take value, to add value, right? So a lot of people, you know, they become successful and then they think the whole world revolves around them. For me, it's kind of upside down where my whole world revolves around other people, and that's the reason for my success.
I like that.
Yeah.
If you could, I like how you said you read a lot of books.
Yeah.
If you... you know, you're on your deathbed, and you could only leave 3 books behind to your kids or your family. What would those 3 books be?
Well, one would be mine. So, I mean, obviously, my kids and my family know who I am. I guess what would the 3 books be? I'd probably leave mine and a couple two other biographies of great people, people that have transformed our society. I would leave one of Winston Churchill, because although a very flawed man, he's probably the only single individual we can credit with our way of life in our society today. And that had he not stood up to Germany and had he not engaged the United States in the war, we would probably have a very terrible society overrun by Nazism. So I would probably leave his book behind. And then I'd probably leave a book about perhaps from, say, Abraham Lincoln or something like that, you know, the 16th president of the United States who, you know, fought up for the rights of others and you know, changed the world as we know it. So I would leave those behind. And then from those books, you'd learn about the man's spirituality, mine, of course, and then you could dive deeper. But I wouldn't leave the Bible per se because it requires interpretation, although I'm a Christian. I wouldn't leave, you know, some deep philosophical stuff because it, you know, requires somebody to teach you. I'd leave biographies.
Interesting. I like that. Some more story-based lessons from...
About human beings, you know, and if you can learn something from another man, that's great. Even if you can learn not to adopt their flaws, then, or a woman, that's great for that matter, then you can become a success too.
Now, who are your, you know, we talk about mentors in the book, and you've mentioned a bunch of mentors you have right now. I just had an episode on mentors. I'm a huge believer that everyone needs to have mentors and continue to develop new mentors and cultivate those relationships constantly and add value to those mentors.
Yeah.
why has having mentors been a powerful reason for your success?
The other day I sat down and I wrote down everyone who's influenced me in my life.
Wow. That must have been taking a long time, right?
Yeah. I'll restate that. I wrote down the most influential people in my life. There's about 10 to 15 people where I either had an encounter with them that I was taken back by. Like, I was like, wow, you know, this is the founder of Microsoft and he's in my house right now. This guy's worth, you know, $50 billion.
Wow.
And for some reason I've come to a place where, you know, I'm shaking the hands of a person that's up there with the pharaohs in terms of their success, right? You know, one day when they look at our society, they will say, those are the pharaohs of our times.
Wow.
Right. And you know, so I've had the privilege through networking, and through constantly adding value, and then also focusing on just being great at what I do, you know. So I don't measure myself to, you know, when I've met certain people that are very successful, you know, I'm not competing with them. I'm in awe of them. I'm in admiration, and I respect and admire them. And good people that are self-confident and that have done good, you know, solid work, you know, they're in awe of other people as well. So like, they're like, wow, I couldn't imagine, you know, making a shake that sold $1 billion. And I'm like, right. I couldn't imagine creating a piece of software that sold $1 trillion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's my approach that number one has yielded me these great mentors. And then number two, what I expect of them is just simply give me some knowledge, and it might be 1 minute, might be 1 hour. And if I'm blessed, like for example, I get to go with Coach Dale Brown to his NCAA Hall of Fame induction in Kansas City next Sunday. And Shaquille O'Neal is also being inducted into the NCAA Hall of Fame, and Coach Brown's mentor or mentee was Shaquille. And so I'm going to be in this moment with these guys that I met as a result of the value that I was creating value. I met these people, and I'm going to get to experience one of their most, you know, profound moments of life. And the reason why I'm able to do that is not because I'm anything special. It's because I've simply ran a process, and I've created a method of adding values, of networking, of keeping in touch, although I'm not a consummate, you know, you won't get texts and emails from me. You probably don't get replies from me. That's not my style, right? But that doesn't mean that I don't love you and don't think about you. It just means that I'm busy.
You're focused on your stuff.
Focus on other stuff.
So when I text you and you don't get back to me, I won't get upset.
Yeah.
I won't take it personally.
Yeah. There's a hundred ways to get a hold of me other than text messages.
Right.
The other thing is I don't like if everybody's like, if you know, if the rule of thumb is you're supposed to reply to text messages when you receive them, you know, I say, screw that. That's not my rule. Like, you know, I don't agree to that rule.
Yeah.
I agree to the rule that, you know, that if I text you and you don't reply to me, I'm not going to be mad. I'm going to call you. That's my rule.
Right.
And if I don't call you, that means I don't care enough about you to actually call. But I'm
take
not going to,
yeah,
that's, you know, so I write my own rules. I don't prescribe to others. And if I do agree to adapt your rule or join your rule, then I'll agree to adapt it and join it. And I reserve the right to change my mind on the subject.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of times like people will be like, well, you said you're going to do this. Well, I reserve the right to change my mind.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You know, that's just it. I don't break my word or, you know, one of the chapters in my book is called Honor Your Deals. You know, I honor my deals, but you know, that
you can't change them.
It doesn't mean I can't change the deal and tell you why I changed it because, you know, frankly, you know, I changed my mind.
Yeah.
Obviously, in business, you have to honor your contracts. I've been in a lot of lawsuits. The other day, I woke up to a lawsuit for $240 million, and I laughed because I was like, "Man, I never thought I'd be so successful that people would try to sue me for $240 million."
Oh my gosh!
Right? You know, I mean, that's
crazy.
That's a cool thing. Right?
I guess
I'm not going to lose. I'm going to have to spend millions of dollars suing them back and all that other stuff. But that said,
the cost of doing business,
that's
I guess,
part
right?
of life, man. The more successful you are, the more they try to take it from you.
Wow, interesting. Now, what's the best way to, you know, for people listening, what's the best way to find a mentor that they're really inspired by? Make sure that they can get in touch with them. What's the best way to get in touch with them?
Add value. So one of the things that I learned early on is that the more successful you are, the more you're probably inspired by or connected to a cause. So if you wanted to get to me, find a cause I'm passionate about and connect to me at that level.
Charity, then like, hey, I want to support this.
Yeah, or I'll donate my time, or, you know, or I love your charity, it inspires me. Here's an article that I read, or send me a book. And I'm not asking for people to send me gifts, but, you know, I had this kid that wanted my time. He had a painting commission, had it sent to me, and it represented both Detroit, right, an office in LA where I was, you know, raised, and I also have an office. And I saw this painting. I'm like, all right, this kid's trying to stand out from the crowd. I've got to take his meeting. So I told him, hey, I'll be in Detroit. He told me, actually, he found out I was in Detroit, followed me on Instagram, then sent me a message. Hey, you know, I'm close by. So I said, yeah, I'll have a meeting with you for 15 minutes. He drove 20 hours. I didn't know it, but he drove 20 hours for a 15-minute meeting.
Wow.
Right? And, you know, so I gave him more than 15 minutes.
You gave him an hour or two or whatever.
Yeah, I gave him like 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't have time that day. But I was like, you know what? This kid will always be in my life if he calls me and he needs help. Why? Because he stood up. You know, he stood above the crowd. And that's all you have to do. It's really easy to gain access to a mentor if you're willing to do things that other people aren't willing to do to add value.
So true. I mean, I get emails a lot from people like, hey, I would love to just take you out to coffee or have a meeting or whatever, but it's like, do something different, right? Like you get tons of those, constantly. Your reps.
7 days a week, I have people, you know, I'm privileged enough and it's a blessing that people actually stop me now because of, you know, the success of my book and its exposure, or because of some of the other, you know, activities I've done with regard to Visalus or the media stuff, you know, asking me to coffee unless there's a real compelling reason.
And just wanting 10 minutes. It's like, it's more than 10 minutes to get there, to show up. It's like,
But you know, I'm more of an introverted person. So spending time with other people is me giving energy. I don't receive it as much by being around other people. Mm. I receive it internally. So to me, it's a real drain on my energy to spend time with people.
Yeah.
So that's probably the reason why, you know, I don't engage with a lot of people and I don't take people up on their opportunities to go to coffee or spend time together. But I will if they figure out a way to replenish my energy by giving me value, or by helping a cause, or, you know, writing a review for my book is one way that people have engaged me in that. You know, that helps me when somebody gives an authentic review of my book. You know, that means that they actually took the time to read my book, that they actually cared enough to write about it.
Yeah.
And they did a service for me. So, you know, I'll reply to those emails. I'll engage with the people on that subject.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. If someone sent you an email today and was like, hey, I just left your review. Here's the link to it. Also, I bought this product of yours and I donated to your charity. Yeah. I just want to say, I love what you're doing.
I want 10 minutes of your time. Yeah. Done. I'm not going to say no to that unless you're creepy.
Yeah. Weird stalker. Yeah. Right.
Oh, I have a lot of those. I get people that write me. There's people that write every single day, 25, 30 times a day. And and it's an interesting thing out there. You have to be careful. You know, you always dream about being in a position where you have a lot of followers, and then, you know, sometimes you realize that there is some complications.
And that's why you built a fence you set around your house, right?
I had to build a security fence. I have to have, you know, cameras everywhere. I have to have full-time security people that monitor, you know, activity and stuff like that. I don't know if you saw this when we were at Runyon. There was a guy that swooped by just to make sure that, you know, there wasn't anything weird happening. The guy on the motorcycle.
Shut up, really?
Yeah, just to make sure, you know, just
no
to,
way.
Yeah, keep eyes on
because
me.
It happens like running even.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty public about my life.
Because you're up there, so people might wait for you or whatever.
Yeah, wow. they know I might be coming through.
Wow.
Yeah, you didn't.
I mean, I knew that. I thought it was like a friend of yours or something.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to be invisible.
Just checking it out, scoping to make sure no one's stalking.
Yeah, just to make sure. Well, because there's a few people that. We have to have profiles on that actually, you know,
if they show up, then you got to watch out for
them. Yeah, they're just obsessed. They're just really obsessed and you have to make sure. And it's not, I hate even saying this. I feel like I'm being pretentious here, but you know, you just have to be careful. Yeah. I have a son. I have, I have a lot of responsibility and I got to make sure that I protect their interests.
So what's the vision now? I mean, you've done so much. You just bought your company back. You sold it for 700 something million.
Bought it back for
143 million. Why did you buy it back? Yeah. And then what's the vision for the next 5-10 years for you? Yeah.
My vision now is if I just spent pretty much all my money buying my company back. So this lifestyle you see, the view, the cars, all that stuff is going to be for sale if I don't start building it. I bought it back because I felt like I could affect. You know, this is my baby. I'm working on acquisitions. I've got, you know, I'm looking at an energy drink company I'm about to buy. Hopefully I'll close a deal in the next couple of days. I like acquiring companies. I have a $20 million venture fund that I've made some pretty astute investments in. I got an investment in a company called Elite Daily, which is blowing up 60 million uniques.
Yeah.
Millennial focus. I got an investment in a company called Fragmob that's blowing up. I got an investment in MyTime blowing up. So I like investing. I like being around entrepreneurs.
Sure.
You know, I see myself as a pseudo angel that can add value to entrepreneurs, giving them operational experience. You know, I know how to scale a business.
Yeah.
I know how to raise money. I know how to take a company public. I know how to sell a company to a public company. You know, I know all that stuff. I'm 37 years old. I figure over the next 20 years, I'll just do what I've been doing more efficiently and with a lot more resources and a lot more scale.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
What's your perfect day look like?
A perfect day. I wake up, I work out, I read, I swim in my saltwater pool. I take a hike at Runyon. I go in my sauna. I hit my office. I meet inspiring people. You know, I get some inspiration from those inspiring people. I work on some projects. One of my philosophies on projects is I'm highly engaged for the first 10% and the last 10% of the project. And I've got a great staff that does the other 80%.
That's smart. I like that idea.
So I'm all in on the first 10% to make sure the project is set up correctly. And then I'm there during the last 80%, but I'm only making 3% of the decisions during the 80 percentile, meaning bring it to me if there's, you know, a change in strategy or there's a, you know, a big fundamental change in what we believe about the product. And then the last 10%, I'm there literally testing and in QA and, you know, and utilizing the product, whether it be a piece of software or, you know, like the cereal product that we created for Vicealis Crunch, you know, I'm actually taste testing every version and every variant, you know, maybe not every, but probably 200-300 taste tests that I expose myself to.
Wow.
Yeah. Yesterday I'm tasting products that are made of, you know, a new sweetener called Stevia and then another sweetener called Monk Fruit. And I'm literally going through and taste testing these products.
Make sure it meets your standards and you like it.
Yeah. I build products for myself. And I know there's a hell of a lot of people out there like me that, you know, want stuff that tastes good. We want to be as healthy as we possibly can, but we're not going to compromise. Like I like pepperoni pizza with ranch dressing. I'll take down a pepperoni pizza with ranch dressing and I'll just work it off the next day and supplement to, you know, to provide better nutrition.
Now, I noticed you didn't have a woman in there. Your perfect day.
And what, I would say my mother.
Okay, interesting. We'll leave that away. That'll be another conversation.
I would say my mother would be a part of that perfect day.
Okay, interesting.
There are women in my perfect day in that I have an amazing support structure, both in my office and my rep base, you know, my promoters and then my fan base. So I probably have more. I'm probably, you know, the truth is I have more people that help me build my business that are female than I do that are male, you know, that I lean on, that I connect with on a daily basis. I'm working with my assistant, Asina, who's amazing. I'm working with my chief administrative officer, Tyler, who's one of the best in the world. And, you know, my promoter force out there, a lot of them are women because women make a lot of the health decisions in the household. You know, most women are the actual ones that are buying the supplements. They're buying the food. You know, that's their decision. So, in fact, my fan page, you know, several hundred thousand fans, but then, you know, millions of reach skews like something like 80% female.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, you know, I'm covered in that department to a degree.
Yeah. You get your energy from there. Yeah.
I do. Yeah, I do.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah. My perfect day would not be just hanging around a bunch of dudes and playing, you know, watching football.
And playing poker or something.
Yeah, not at all. I don't gamble at all. I'm a terrible gambler. I gamble in my entrepreneurial. That's my high-risk endeavors.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to wrap it up here in a second. So there's a couple questions left. But I want to recommend everyone, make sure you go get this book. If you're in an airport, you'll see it somewhere. Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, How We Went from Gang Member to Multimillionaire Entrepreneur with Ryan Blair and Don Yeager. Updated with new chapter. Awesome book.
Thank you.
Two final questions. One is, what are you most grateful for recently?
Yeah. What am I most grateful for recently? You know, my son has autism and he's made a lot of strides. We're able to really engage at a high level. He's loving, you know, he'll tell me, he's like, Dad, I love you. And just to be able to hear that, especially with a kid who has autism and, you know, he doesn't have a very strong vocabulary and he doesn't very articulate very well. Autism is a disease that affects communication and expression. And so the fact that I have him at 5.5 years old, he'll tell you 5.75 to that point is what I'm most grateful for.
Mm, yeah, I like that.
Really?
I like that. That's cool.
Thank you.
I don't have kids, so I still don't know what that experience is like. But every time I talk to parents.
Yeah. Everybody always told me it'll change you forever and it has. He's my anchor windward. So, you know, I've made a lot of progress with him. And I guess that the tip I can give to people that are facing, you know, tragedy in their lives or difficulty with kids with special needs or whatever it is you have to attack it like you would any problem and you have to triage it and you have to find the best solutions and you have to really focus on the problem. And I wrote an article on I have a blog on Forbes and I wrote an article about compartmentalization, which is, you know, every day I have to compartmentalize my life, you know, in order for me to focus on the biggest problems at hand. And so I can't let my work problem take away from my focus on my son, but I can't let my focus on my son destroy my work.
Yeah.
So I have to have equal compartments, or maybe not equal, but I have to have time slots and compartments of focus on each of those particular problems.
I like that. I've got one question left for you.
Yeah. This is going to be the one that I've been worried about. He saved up the whole, he built rapport for one hour to ask this question.
Now this question is what I ask everyone at the end, but before I do, I want to acknowledge you first.
Thank you.
It's It's been a lot of fun connecting so far. Yeah. I mean, I've been following you for a while. I want to acknowledge you for the incredible gift you are to the world, because I know you have a big heart.
Thank you.
After connecting with you and doing this hike and being here, I know how valuable the people that work for you are.
Yeah.
And I know how much you actually care.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it's awesome to see and connect and see how, you know, you actually really show up in the world. You show up powerfully. You show up with energy. You show up with intention to add value to others. Yeah. And you're making a huge difference.
I appreciate that. You know, it's good to hear. It's a weird feeling when you get compliments and accolades and people like yourself there. You know, you're one of the best in the world at what you do. So I really appreciate hearing that. And, you know, one of the other things, just you added value to me today. I got a, you know, person to go on a hike, and I asked a lot of questions about you. I asked about how you built such a successful podcast, about, you know, your prior success as an entrepreneur. If anything, I probably extracted more value out of you than you did on me on the hike today.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. I appreciate it. Final question is what, I'm actually going to videotape this because I'm going to put it on Instagram or something.
Yeah,
I'll throw it on Facebook.
No, yeah, whatever you want.
So the final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
What's my definition of greatness? To know that you put it all on the line and you've done your very best, and to know that you held nothing back, and to know that you either failed and gave it your best try, or you've succeeded and you've won and it was the hardest thing you've ever done. So I think, you know, overcoming great challenges is probably my definition of greatness. And the more you set yourself up to do that, the more, you know, exhilarating it is when you actually do win, or you do lose, you know, you tried your best. That's my definition of greatness. I'm Ryan Blair, and I endorse this message.
Love it. Go to nothingtolose.com. Also, Ryan Blair everywhere online. We'll have everything linked up in the show notes.
Awesome.
Ryan, you are a champion, man. I appreciate you so
awesome,
much.
Awesome, brother. I appreciate it. It's good spending time with you, and I appreciate it. I've learned a lot from this experience. Thank you.
Thanks. And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Ryan. Had a fun time with Ryan, connecting today, interviewing him, and diving into his interesting mind about how he overcomes challenges, how he grows his business, and what's up for the future. So I'm very excited. I hope to bring him back on another time because I had a lot of fun with him. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends over on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And make sure to connect with Ryan everywhere online. He's got a great Facebook fan page. He's over on Instagram as well. All of the show notes are back at lewishouse.com/107. You can get all of his information. Make sure to check out his book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. It's a great read. Lots of tips and useful information in there. And I appreciate you guys so much for being on here each and every week. Make sure to check out some previous episodes. If you are new to the show, go ahead and subscribe over at itunes.com/schoolofgreatness. Let me know what you think by leaving a review. And we've got lots of great interviews to come. So make sure to subscribe so you can stay up to date. Each week, we bring you an interesting guest. You're going to love it. You guys know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great. Sure.